In this episode of COL Drag Race Tea Time, it's Judy, Judy, Judy. Hitch a ride on the trolley and meet us in St. Louis as the queens celebrate our favorite friend of Dorothy, Miss Judy Garland. Best Judy's Gary and Damon strike up the band during this Makeover Your Bestie challenge. Whose star's born and who's taking the Easter parade back to Gay Paris? Click your heels three times to see what Drag Race Tea Time All Stars Season 4, Episode 8 starts now. RuPaul Drag Race.
Hey, kitty girls, it's Sunday, February 3rd. Just a little after Groundhog's Day, 2019. Welcome to Comes Out Loud Drag Race Tea Time, All-Stars Season 4, Episode 8, a.k.a. RuPaul's Best Judy Race. We're going to be discussing what happened in the episode, but for those of you that don't know who us fabulous co-hosts are, my name is Gary, and with me over here to my side is...
Hello, everyone. It's Damon. Let's... Are you my best Judy?
I don't know. Am I?
I don't know.
Most people would call that shade. And I'm like, well, that's kind of fair. Like, I don't think I know all your life secrets. So I don't know if I qualify as your best Judy.
Same here.
Very true. So we are going to get into discussing tonight what happened in the latest episode just a couple nights ago. And we need to discuss the theme for this particular week. When I saw the title, I was kind of confused. But they did a little fun, and they kind of mashed some things up together to get us referencing like this.
Judy, Judy, Judy.
So Judy Garland is the base of the theme of what we're going to be doing this week, in which all of the contestants are going to have their best Judy, their bestest buddy, friend, lover, boyfriend, husband, partner, something in that realm, joining them because it's the Makeover Challenge. Yes.
This is the do I want to call it the skills challenge? No. I think just maybe. Keeping it a makeover is probably the best way to put it. It's the magical makeover challenge. It's the, like, put this person that probably has never done drag before in drag.
Mm-hmm.
Not necessarily quickly.
Right.
But, like, you got to look. He's got to look. You all get on the stage and look together.
She got the look. Anyways. That being said, are you ready to get into discussing the challenge in and of itself?
Okay. All stars, each of you needs to transform your best Judy into your very own drag sister. Family resemblance required.
All right, so let's circle back to this, but we discussed a little bit in pre-show, because David, you got something to say about this family, like, you know, resemblance required.
Yes, I do. So, any of us who have been in the drag scene or been around drag queens, we've heard of, like, drag sisters and drag daughters and families that come together and drag mamas and all that stuff. It all kind of, like, blends together. Mm-hmm. Sometimes, 9 times out of 10, I'll go ahead and put it like that, there is usually not really a family, quote-unquote, resemblance.
Mm-hmm.
Like, maybe at first, because you are doing the other person's makeup.
Mm-hmm.
And you know how to do your makeup, but you don't have necessarily how to do makeup on somebody else. So you kind of just, like, cheat and do what you do.
Right.
And then, but then, like, if they continue, usually they learn how to do their own thing and put their own spin on stuff and make some kind of, you know, decisions on what they wish to do with their faces. You know, some people may want to do something different. I'm going to pull this up just a little bit. There we go. Okay. So, yeah, it's just very I want to just kind of make it clear, like, to me, like, the whole family resemblance being required thing, I think it's sometimes a bit of a, for the sake of the show necessarily, but not really for drag sisters and drag daughters that we know of mm-hmm. in the world of drag. So,
right. And I agree with you that the requirement might be a little unspecified.
Yeah. Especially considering some of the queens and some of their best duties. It's going to be really hard, y'all.
Yes, because in one instance, they are totally different ethnicities. So,
what is really probably?
Yeah. So, you know, actually, three of the duos have different, or four of them.
I'm pretty sure, pretty much, with the exception of.
Let me think.
I think all of them.
Actually, yeah, now that I think about it, for those of you that haven't seen or don't know, so Latrice is with Tim, Latrice's best friend of many, many years, 25 years, I think, or something.
Yeah.
And Tim's drag persona is Alexis Knight, was originally decades ago and then was resurrected for the show, which actually I thought was nice that they did that and they didn't do the, like, let's make us spoofy name off of the original name.
Yeah.
Kind of thing. Monique and Shanita. They both are
Danny.
Right. So Danny comes in and turns into Shanita Hart. Trinity's boyfriend, Leo, is the best Judy, and he becomes Indigo, which I'm guessing he's also a Tuck. Indigo the Tuck.
Yep.
And then we've got Monet Exchange and her best Judy, Patrick, who is also known as Patty all the time, becomes Patty Cash. Which it took me a moment to realize that that was a wordplay on Petty Cash, because I didn't get that right away. And then we have Manila Luzon, Manila's husband, Michael, is her best Judy. And Michael turns into Ayo wife, Luzon. And Naomi Smalls, her bestie friend, Ricardo, comes in and becomes Extra Smalls.
Yes.
So, yeah, it's cute how they kind of come up with the names and put them together.
Very interesting.
So, Damon, what were your thoughts on the Best Judy's Challenge?
So, my first thought is I call it Makeover Mayhem, and it's the reason I'm going to kind of gloss over the whole makeover part of it, because every episode we do when we do the Makeover Challenge, you have a lot of the same kind of tropes, you know, things that happen, you know. They're going to have to shave because they all have, you know, facial hair. Tucking is always a big, like, oh, I want it. We're going to have to tuck. Like walking in the heels. We always have someone walk the run, the workroom back and forth. So it's a lot of the same kind of, you know, mayhem-y things that go before in every episode. And I kind of, it's nice to see it, but it's kind of like, we get it, you know. Right. Overall, the whole like dance part of it though, which was kind of cute. I'm going to assume, and this is just me, that everyone had like, you had to do the same like things. Everyone probably had got the same outfit. Cause it was the same black wig, same hat, same shirt and tie and,
jacket
combination and same like kind of short pant. And almost, I think, the same kind of heel. Like,
right. I believe from what I've pieced together and a lot of the post-episode stuff online that all of that stuff was provided. However, it was confirmed that the choreography and all the movements were completely theirs to make up. So they didn't they didn't have a routine that they had to memorize. They had to each come up as a duo with their own stuff.
Yeah. Which is kind of cool, which I'm kind of fine with. That's kind of what you need to do with that kind of challenge. And the, you know, I kind of am I always have a moment with some of this stuff, because for me, I'm of the belief, like, you should probably do your own thing. Like, you should be able to do your own thing. But I get, for the sake of television, they wanted everyone to kind of have a similar look, because they probably did the number, like, the same song 5-6 times and probably did it more than once. Just, you know.
Right. Camera angles and all that jazz.
Et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah. So I'm betting that's kind of the case. So they probably didn't want someone to have something that they literally threw together in like 2 seconds, because holy shit, I have to come up with an outfit for the runway and paint her and paint me and paint do all this and da da da.
Right.
So yeah. So we're gonna give you this quote unquote, you know, curveball of a thing, but we're gonna give you everything else. You just have to come up with choreography.
And be able to lip sync to the pre-recorded number. Luckily, the pre-recorded number was done by one or two voices already ahead of time. It's called My Best Judy. It's available on iTunes.
Ding!
Yeah, exactly. So it's all lyrics about, like, being a best friend, but then there's also kind of some referencing to Judy Garland in it. I thought it was cute. It was a cute little number. It was sort of extra filler than just having nothing but runway. So I thought that was kind of decent what they did in that case. For me, what I said was being judged by your bestie. And this is one of my issues about this makeover episode concept. It's true of all the makeovers. Your skills are put on the line based on how another individual looks and how they perform, and it's completely, mostly out of your control.
True.
So while you may be able to paint your partner, that's it. Like, how they carry themselves, how the garment fits them, like, how they walk, how they move, how they talk, how they gesture, how they lip sync, like, all of that is not on you. Like you could help rehearse with them, but there's just only so much you can do, especially in about 48 hours. So that's my criticism of this episode. While I don't dislike this episode, I recognize that it's maybe not quite fair that you are being judged on your bestie in this case, or whoever your makeover partner is.
That's true.
We've seen that in the past where they had like the veterans, the gay vets, and they had like women, and they've had like these, you know, buff straight guys, and you know, like every time there's been a makeover challenge, it's always been this specific demographic, and it's always very challenging. This was probably one of the easiest of the bunch, because all the men that got made over were gay. As much as I know of. And in some cases, it was not the first time in drag. So I kind of thought that was a slight unfortunate advantage for some people.
Possibly. I will say this much. I think this was – I also agree that they also are their besties. So they know, like – who they are. This isn't like random, like people that we've, you know, I'm saying picked up at the street, but you know what I mean? Like, this isn't someone random that I'm literally just meeting for the first time in this moment. I'm literally like, I have known this person for X amount of years, potentially. Or they are, in some cases, like partners and lovers.
Right.
You know, so they know, they could have some inkling about the ins and outs of their normal day, their lives as drag queens, which is always, you think you know,
right?
But sometimes you don't.
Agreed.
So, and this, I think, was a good way to kind of give that image, you know. And even if these are, like, I think when they talk with Monique and Danny, I have to keep looking at my
list. I know,
I forget their names. Like, <That's okay. laughs> Monique and Danny, you know, they hang out. They probably were hanging out. If that's the kind of thing, and maybe they weren't hanging out and doing when she was doing drag, maybe they just kind of like hang out and hang out outside of drag, which seems to be, as they mentioned in their little workroom moment, like they don't get that as much time anymore.
Right.
because Monique's, you know, star is rising, as it were, and
right,
she's doing stuff now. So yeah.
Well, and that's one of the things that I found interesting about the dynamics between the different people. Like in the case of Monet, Patty is her assistant. That's her. Mm-hmm. That's her drag assistant who helps her get ready at shows and books travel and blah blah blah, like all that stuff. So. That's where I was kind of like, some people have a bigger advantage than others. Like Leo, Leo for Trinity is well aware of who Trinity is and as an identity and has probably been involved in some of the aspects of Trinity, but not necessarily doing drag. Manila revealed in the Roscoe's viewing party in Chicago. I watched it last night. Well, I watched and listened. Basically, I was working on some other stuff. But Manila revealed that her husband has, like, thrown on a wig and, like, you know, like, just to be silly around the house kind of a thing. But it was never drag. Like, you know, and Manila said something about, like, he put something on for pads. Oh, he was putting on the neck pillows. Like, he was putting them in, like, his shorts or something to make bigger hips or something goofy. Like, so it was kind of cute. It was kind of funny. But, like, you understand that, like, Manila was saying, like, yeah, so my husband has not dabbled in drag, but my husband is not, you know, unaware. And it was revealed that Manila's husband, Michael, was there for Manila when with Sahara's passing. And going through that whole process and that kind of stuff. And that was really important, that, you know, that they have that relationship and that bond. So, yeah, for me, I felt like being judged by your bestie was questionable. It's not horrible. I guess I'm just not happy about the fact that your potential in the continuing in this competition is reliant on somebody else's performance in a way. Like, you are partially responsible, but only to a certain point. So, exactly. Like, you know, if they're stage blocking you while you're trying to do a duet, that's not really your fault. And you're trying to, like, compensate for it. Things like that. So, you do that shade fan. Do you want to get on to talking about the runway?
Let's.
All right. Let's. Do that, shall we? Put the bass in your wall.
Category is plastique fantastique.
What? Whoops. I did not ask you to play that.
Whoops.
That was last week.
That was last week, y'all.
So I do, before we get into talking about the actual runway looks of the best Judies, I want to talk about this.
Oh, wait. Stop. Hold on. Go.
You got your same fan and your mug of tea ready for this, right? So here's the thing. What I'm showing on screen is RuPaul sitting at judges panel in her look for, like, the judging. This picture that I have up here from, like, the bust up, I have no issues with, personally. I don't care about the diamond, like, thing bling on the forehead and the white hair wig. Like, I think she looks very beautiful. The shoulder pads, I'm a huge fan of. I love the look, like, the structure that we're giving to this and the shape. What I don't have a picture of, because I didn't have time, was the full body look of the outfit. Once you get below the bust, girl, no. You ain't got no shape. You look like a big silver box. No, no, no. Like, I don't know what happened when this outfit was put together. Like, I'm just like...
Was Aldi having a moment? Like,
well, and so here's the thing. I'm going to jump over to our Telegram chat because now that is the hot topic at the moment. Since we're recording, people are like, oh, are we allowed to talk about the show? So... I'm going to edit a little bit. Barron said, Rue, Carol Burnett wore it better. Ditch that curtain rod bullshit and smack Zaldi for the lazy white diamond cosplay. I know. And then Eric said, at first glance, I was like, ooh, pretty. But then when she started walking down the runway, I was trying to figure out what kind of bedazzled silver box she was wearing.
Yes. So, it's so hard for me to describe how I feel about this look.
Right.
Like, just this picture in and of itself, I'm just like, who, what, like, why? I've been noticing, and this is just me going to be perfect, but I'm going to be honest, are we running out of ideas? I think even when I talked to Baron prior to this as well, kind of like over the weekend, because we all kind of agree in the Telegram chat to stop, you know, conversations about the show for about 48 hours, give or take.
Right.
So RuPaul's look, I just, like I said, I have, like, I was talking with Baron, and I'm kind of like, I've not had a great, I've not been a big fan of a lot of her looks this season. Some have been pretty good, like when we saw her legs, like for the first time in a long time, mm-hmm. that was kind of cool. But since then, it's just kind of like something is going on, and I know we don't necessarily want her to like repeat an outfit or something along those lines, but I'm kind of like, maybe we need to do something, because her looks are not getting are getting weird. And there's other things too. There's makeup and hair. Hair's looking pretty good. So
yeah, I think Delta's doing a really good job with the hair. I don't know why nobody's talking about the fact that David is no longer doing the face. It's actually a team of three women. And why do I know this? Because I watch the credits roll at the end of each episode. And if you can pause them as they go through, you'll see makeup and hair being listed and who did them. And there are three female names, none of which are Raven. I mean, David. So she ain't doing it. And I'm okay with the makeup for the most part this season. I'm pretty okay with it. And honest, and this particular, you know, look, I'm okay with it too. Like there is a callback a little bit to me to Tina Turner at Mad Max again in this one. And it's because of the way the hair's pulled a little off to the side and the volume and the big shoulder pads. Like, It's not, you know, a replica, obviously, but it's hearkening to that a little bit.
Yeah.
And maybe
it's very big.
And maybe that's part of the issue, is that there it is very difficult to be that original, you know, to pull that. I don't know. So, and who knows how these looks are, you know, manifested, whether they're a part of, you know, something or not, in that case. So I think that that's a thing that just has to be addressed in some shape or form. But like, I didn't get the white diamond reference, yeah. which I think is a Steven Universe thing. Like, I've seen Steven Universe, most of it. Like, I don't quite remember what white diamond looks like, but I get like that, like, you know, how that's maybe a ripoff or whatever of that character.
It's very interesting.
Yeah.
It's not necessarily a direct thing, but it's kind of like I get where they're going with it, where people who are like mad about this can go for it with it. So
yeah. All right. That. You ready to get into talking about looks on the runway?
Sure.
All right. So first up, Latrice Royale and Alexis Knight, or as it was later explained in the judges' panel critiques, fire and ice, or fire and water.
Or blue and red, or hot
right.
and cold.
Right.
Like, she was, Latrice was defending the fuck out of these districts.
Yeah, she was just firing them off on camera, right? Like when that came up about how the critique was that there was not a cohesiveness to the look of this case. So here we have Tim, this lovable bear guy. Who gets dead over in drag. And I know that his before and after is not exactly the best pictures of him, but to be fair, when the reveal happens in the workroom and the face is painted and he spins around and they had the gall to use the Alyssa Edwards audio clip for beast. I was like, damn y'all.
Trinity called him Beast.
Oh, I thought they played that, like the snake rattle kind of deal.
No, Trinity called him Beast.
Yeah. So
I put that down. Like, that is something I'm going to point out.
Well, and here's the thing that's difficult, okay? So, and I'm not critiquing Latrice, but Latrice is a black woman who is painting a white man. So I imagine that there's some, like, lack of experience in how to, you know, how to paint a white woman face. Mm-hmm. And so...
possibly, and also, I'm just going to put it out there, like, there's some like, Tim, when he, like, Tim has a very, he has one of those, he got a chubby boy face. He's got that, like, double-ish chin and everything else. And those are harder things to cover and contour. And while we know Latrice is a big, big girl, too, it's hard to then do that on someone else. You can think of what you know.
Right.
But the face is different. The neck is different. It's going to be a little bit harder to do.
Right.
I will give her props for the eyes. They kind of work. The lips, they said, were kind of the same. And again, Latrice has bigger lips.
Right.
You know?
So that's just... in terms of the resemblance, like, they're both wearing bling. They're both wearing, like, shiny, you know, kind of outfit stuff. So, yes, the lipstick was identical for both of them. So perhaps it would have been a little better if Latrice had been wearing blue lips to go with her blue eyeshadow, with her blue jewels, with her blue dress. So that would have pronounced that a little bit more. I kind of agree with some of the criticism online that the hair should have been more like Latrice's. Like, instead of this double the size of Latrice's, like, swept, you know, around kind of thing, if they had, even if it was a different color, but had been parted the opposite way, maybe.
There were choices that were made that could have been, like, so my, like, overall, my critiques of this are, like, fun, fabulous, and forgettable. And my main reason about this is a lot to do with the fact that, like, some people chose to do a lot of similarities of things to kind of give the whole sister vibe, which I can understand and respect. This to me was a very forgettable kind of look. This is traditional Latrice.
Right.
Which pageant, blah, blah, what have you. And unfortunately, I lose the mind once it's gone. My biggest issues are, again, like, if you're going to go fire, ice, or red, black and red and red and blue, you're going to kind of make that sort of the statement, then everything needs to be the same except the color.
Right.
Like,
and
the,
like,
dress should be long.
Right. In this shot, that's the key thing, right? Alexis Knight is wearing, you know, a cut to the thigh length outfit, where Latrice's is a gown that pulls onto the floor. And this is where my problem is now, because I clocked it when I first watched the episode. So Alexis Knight has black, you know, slightly see-through material all the way down onto the hands, most likely trying to cover up for arm hair. And then we've got white tights on the legs. So she looks like a ghost from the waist down. And I'm like, girl, no. Like, that does not work. Like, if the skin tone needs to be the same everywhere. I have kind of talked about this before, and it drives me crazy when I see somebody wearing stuff. I don't care if it's a breastplate, if it's, you know, like a nude illusion, your shit gotta match. And I when she walked out, I was like, oh, damn it. Like,
yeah, it just doesn't work. Like, I didn't even, you know, again, for me, like, the forgettable part of it, I didn't even pay attention to any of that shit. Like, I didn't even, like...
Listen to you.
I knew they were red and blue, and I knew that Alexis had the big, like, hair up, like, wave on the one side, which is classic pageant kind of look, and Latrice had the bigger kind of, like, and they were kind of both blonde-ish, but that was it. Like,
Right.
Choices, people, choices.
And choices. Here's the thing about, like, I want you to look at Alexis's eyebrows, all right, Damon, in this particular thing. And I want you to pay attention to the Latrice's eyebrows versus Alexis's eyebrows. They don't look the same. So to me, that's part of that criticism about the resemblance issue. Like, it's almost like Latrice didn't paint Alexis. And I'm not saying that that's what happened, but it's just enough of a difference that I'm like, eh. Like, you know, that's not necessarily working for me. So I was very mixed about this duo.
Yeah.
All right. So now we move on to Monique Hart and Shanita Hart. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No.
I was going to say,
this is my fun one.
Right. I totally agree. Like, I loved when they came out together and they stood side by side and they made a thing. Like,
yeah,
I was like, get the fuck out of here with your Muppetry shit. Like,
yes.
Like, so for those of you that haven't seen, Shanita Hart is wearing a giant eyeball with blue eyeshadow. Monique Hart is wearing a giant eyeball with purple or lilac eyeshadow. And their faces are done in the same colors to match. And then they have one pink tight and one black tight. And the and when they're standing side by side, the inside tights are pink. So they kind of look like, I guess, a tongue that's bifurcated, that's sticking out or whatever. So, like, there's a lot of, like, twinsiness and yet differentness between them.
And this one, I like this one. This was a lot of fun. This was very – and actually, they weren't opposites. Oh, well, they were at first, and then they switched eyes. Like, I don't know if you saw that. Like,
correct.
So it was cool. I think this was – a great idea. This is a great choice, you know, to have the, like, the arm sleeve that had the eyebrow or eyelashes on it so they could wink with it. That was just cute and fun. And you know, and they do look like sisters. Everything kind of works together.
Right. In this particular case, so Danny, if it wasn't for the curly, puffy, blondish white hair on his head would probably look like Street Trade. You know, I mean, you know, boy packing hanging to the left, notably, in this picture. And he's got some tattoos and that kind of stuff. I mean, he looks like a dude, you know, a slightly gay dude. So I think the transition from before to after is actually pretty decent.
Yeah. You know, it's a good job. Danny reminds me of, John Pauly a little bit. Like,
he does. You're right. And so,
yeah, like, I love what they did. I like the choices that they made. And while, you know, I'm looking now and I see, I notice, oh, well, like, everything all kind of worked. It all just kind of worked. Like, when now that they're on opposite sides of each other in this picture, it doesn't, the illusion kind of leaves.
Right.
But, you know, hey, it works.
Right. They look like a bookend set, I think, is mostly what judges were probably looking for more of, which is that whole twinsies issue, which is the family resemblance issue. So, yeah. All right. Then we get Manila Luzon and Ayo Wife Luzon. So I was shocked by this. They come walking out as, like, representations of cards from a deck of cards, and Manila had some cards in her hand from a playing card deck, and then they, like, flurled, you know, them in the air. Notably, Manila is the Queen of Clubs, which was, like, kind of punny, especially after the last episode that they had. And then Aya Wife, aka Michael, is, I think, the Queen of Diamonds. So, yeah, it's kind of funny. Like, Michael's so adorable.
Yeah.
Like, as Michael, with these big, like, Jesse Raphael type, you know, kind of crazy glasses and this, you know, loud print. And but he's a tiny little guy. You know, he's just cute. He looks like that kind of, like that businessy executive, you know, kind of person. Yeah. And he looks good in drag. I will say that Manila, I think, did a beautiful job with the face, with the makeup. But the outfits? I'm just so disappointed.
This was another one for me that was forgettable-ish. Yeah. Because while I like playing cards, because, you know, I play cards and stuff like that, I got the idea. I get the premise behind it.
Right.
It just didn't land for me.
Right.
I'm kind of tired of this word that, like, Carson uses when he uses, like, the word costumey. I am tired of that word. So, main critique at this point, like, fuck, like, words like costumey. They're drag queens. They can wear costumes. Like let's get over that. This is not a fashion show. This is a drag queen. This is a drag race.
Right. And sometimes a drag queen wears clothes that are evocative of a character and not the drag queen.
Exactly.
And so I understood where Carson was coming from, because these do seem like outfits that you would buy at, like, the Spirit Halloween store.
Mm-hmm.
And that's probably what they're really critiquing, is that these don't look, like, originally innovative enough, maybe. Mm-hmm. They're a little too crafty based, which, again, is a weird criticism, because and this is what it comes down to. And Manila said this, I think, on the Roscoe's live viewing party or whatever. The fact that Manila had been at such a high level delivering week after week after week, and it was couture and it was all this stuff, and then you get this, I think she was trying to say it's unfair that I am being judged by my past, like what I've been bringing to the runway for this week.
Yeah.
I'm kind of mixed on that. Like, I understand where she's coming from, but I'm like, yeah, but that's the problem. It's all stars. Like, your challenge is to raise the bar. And, bitch, you rose the bar. Like, you were the one to beat. And then you kind of sidestepped it. Like, you know, you didn't keep it at that level. And like, I get that you only have so much time, and it's difficult to put a whole thing together, like, you know, the other stuff that you delivered previously. So.
Mm-hmm. And, like, I guess it's this – I wish there was more to it, like more structure, something along those lines, to kind of take it from the costumey level to the, like, fashion, drag, whatever you want to call it, level. Yes, I do admit it can get a little bit more. We could have gotten a little bit more, especially considering what you've been wearing.
Right. Like, I think these outfits would have been stepped up a notch if she had put the emblem of what they represent in somehow in a print pattern all over the outfits. Mm-hmm. So instead of just, like, the shoulders and the top and the you know,
crown,
the crown, or, you know, the extra piece looking like the club, if she had put clubs all over her pattern, like, of her outfit, that would have added something extra, instead of making it look so plain. I just realized how crazy would it be if she had done a pile of all those clubs, like, along the bottom hemline, like, they were all falling and they were just, like, piled, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. With, like, along the bottom, and the same thing with, you know, Aya Wife's diamonds or whatever. That would have been an extra cool kind of effect. But
and I think I'd mentioned this in the pre-show potentially. One of the things I will say that should have been done, and this is just, like I said, this is my personal opinion, to get them a better look of Sister, is if hairs were the same. Whether it be Manila is wearing a black wig, or Aya Wife is wearing a blonde wig, or they're both wearing, to me, Manila's signature, which is the black with a blonde or a couple of blonde streaks.
Right. Right.
Like, I think that would have kind of given it that more sister vibe.
Mm-hmm.
And while it may not necessarily work, I get where she was going with this, because, you know, black hair would not necessarily go really good with the whole black, like, headpiece and stuff.
Right.
It wouldn't have shown, maybe not shown as well. But again, you could have done something. It would have just helped. One little thing I think would have helped that.
Right. What I just realized would have been cool is, for me, is if Manila wore red hair that was the same shade matching color as the red on Aya Wife's outfit.
Yeah. If it had been red. Yeah.
And then that would have been more counterbalance of the red black of their two outfits.
Mm-hmm. I suppose the red blue of certain people.
Yes. So moving on, we have Monet Exchange and Patty Cash. See? Right, that whole little thing, like patty cake makes more sense to me than actually the pun was that it was like petty cash.
Petty cash, yeah.
Right.
So this to me was the fabulous one, one of the fabulous ones.
Okay.
The looks were great. I liked what they did. They looked like sisters while mm-hmm. not necessarily looking like sisters. Like,
right.
There's such a contrast between the two of them. They had to give each other the same outfit. Like they're just, there was no way. If they had done anything else, if they had put on what Manila and Isle Wife had, they would have failed. It would have failed.
Right. And the interesting thing is that they had from the waist up, like a kind of a twinsy look. Like they both had this dark hair that's like wavy, bouncy, kind of, I guess I want to say like, what is it? Betty Page, Veronica Lake,
mm-hmm.
kind of like, you know, buxomish, but they're wearing these cute tuxedo style jackets made out of this like crazy kind of 2-3-tone gold deal. But, you know, we got to recognize that Monet is chocolate milk and Patty is like cream white. Like, so that was a thing. Some people online have been kind of blasting Monet for saying that she didn't really deliver on her face, that she barely put any makeup on. And, like, I think that was a judgment call on her part because they had to work so much at what Patty was going to look like. And Patty doesn't necessarily look like she has a lot of makeup on. Like, I think she intentionally pulled back on her own, you know, face that she was putting on to try to be more similar mm-hmm. to Patty. I appreciated, as someone pointed out, that Monet is actually wearing what you thought Patty was going to wear, and that Patty is wearing what you thought Monet was going to wear, because Monet is always in like a bodysuit, you know, this leotard thing.
Yeah.
And so, like, I appreciated the fact that Patty, like, her skin, her face, her hands, her legs sort of matched. Like, the legs, the white tights and that really, like, white creamy kind of color wasn't a perfect match, but it was a hell of a lot closer mm-hmm. than what we've seen before. I am surprised, though, that Patrick, a.k.a. Patty, they did not use Patty's hair. Patty's got this long, like, kind of semi-luxurious, like, reddish-orange hair. And I'm sort of surprised that they decided to hide all that and put a wig on instead of just styling the real hair.
Well, then, because you would lose the potential family resemblance. I'm just going to put it out there. The only way that Monet could have done it is she wears like a reddish hair, and red hair might be a little stretch. It would have to kind of be the same kind of look or something along those lines. Yeah. So I'm glad that but good God, did you see those braids on Patty? My God.
Oh, the Pippi Longstocking thing?
Yeah.
Yes.
A lot of fucking hair on his head.
Yeah.
But, you know, at least they didn't cut his hair.
Well, I thought that was like kind of like stunty, stupid, funny about like the shaving the eyebrows and shaving the mustache. I was like, well, obviously the mustache is coming off. Like, come on. And the thing is that like Monet and Patty and Bob the drag queen and a bunch of girls, they're all from New York. So I've seen Patty in other people's videos mm-hmm. and referenced in podcasts. Like, so yeah. Patty is potentially a future contestant in another season. I'm just going to call it out. You heard it here, if not first, eventually. That maybe not in season 11 or season 12, but maybe season 13 or something, if it goes that far. You might see, you know, Patty make a comeback. Imagine that. So, you know, she's a ginger girl. Like, you know, so she's got fair complexion, which is something you got to work with. And
that's the... Sorry, that's the thing. Like, okay. When people were talking about like losing the makeup, and that's maybe there's a possibility. There's a shit ton of makeup on Patty's face, but she is so fair skinned,
right?
That it's hard to see because it all kind of blends in. I will give a laugh to Eric in the live chat.
Yes,
it says every light bounced off of Patty's skin, literally glowing. So yeah, like I'm
yeah.
In agreement with that.
They're definitely, and there's even the height difference. Like the side by side just cracks me up. Like Patty looks so tiny next to Monet. You know, she looks like
my little sister.
She looks like a little China doll, honestly. You know what I mean? Like that China white porcelain skin from like those older antique style dolls. Like, yeah. So they were ones that I liked as well. Moving on, we have Trinity the Tuck and Indigo the Tuck. For me, my comment on Runway was one duo was perfection. And this is it. I was blown away the moment they walked out. I was like, holy shit. They did it. Like, they pulled off the bookend, alike but not 100% twinsy kind of thing. Leo as Indigo is a beautiful woman. Trinity painted the shit out of his face. Like, like, did so good, you know, expanded the lip a little bit beyond his already, like, nice lips. Like, you know, just, I mean, Trinity obviously has been doing this shit for, what, 14 years, we know, and, you know, really put a lot of talent into this and took this print that apparently is very popular from a certain Versace fashion runway look one year and gave them this outfit. And what I found interesting is that Trinity went for the power woman kind of look with the skirt and the jacket, you know, and the heels. And I think they might have had matching belts and some matching jewelry. But then, well, not exactly matching jewelry, maybe the earrings. But they had, you know, different style of necklaces. It was all about the blue, gold, white. Notably, Indigo's hair is a slightly darker blondish white. Trinity's is a lot more towards the platinum.
Yep.
Indigo was wearing, you know, these tight, you know, kind of like pants style, but in the same blue. Yeah. The whole thing was just a complete fucking package.
It all worked really, really well. And I will give kudos and props to Trinity because this was like my favorite look. This was another fabulous for me.
And
it just all work together.
I agree with Eric in the live chat. How is this not the top look? I seriously thought, spoiler alert, that Trinity and Indigo were going to be the top two. Like, not the top two, but in the, like, who was going to be top two. I thought Trinity was going to be in it. And
I agree.
That did not happen. So
I agree. I honestly, like when they came out, I loved what they did. I loved their...
Even Indigo's body movements. Like...
Yeah.
Trinity probably cracked a fucking whip and beat the shit out of her boyfriend on it, but because she's such a ball buster. But I mean, Indigo knew how to pose, like how to stand, how to gesture. It wasn't a perfect 100, but my God, it was at least 90. Like, it was just really, really well executed.
The looks were just great, and everything kind of worked together, and I love what they did. I wish... They again, like with Trinity, I think people need to like be careful with Miss Trinity. Like, she is here to win, and she has made it very clear. And I am flabbergasted that she did not win this challenge.
We'll get back to that.
I
want to get back to the one thing that you said. We'll discuss that when we get to the end. moving on, then we have I think it's what last but not least we have Miss Naomi Smalls in. And extra smalls, which I thought was hysterical because in Fashion Photo Review, Raja makes a comment about why don't they just call her petite smalls, and then Aquaria says in such a shady way, well, actually petite and extra small are two different sizes because I actually wear an extra small. So, yeah. I thought Raja was going to murder Aquaria. Oh, my God. It was so funny.
Oh, my God.
So shady.
So fucking shady.
And Aquaria is such a bitchy, like shade deliverer. Like, it's so, like, you don't even realize you've been cut till it's over. Like,
till you're bleeding on
right,
the floor.
Right, like, right. Like, your jugular is squirting out, and you're like, what the hell happened? So, anyways.
Gasket on my neck.
Right. So, Aquaria's whole point is that extra smalls is actually a real size, and that Naomi would know that as a fashion person. So, I mean, it was just so interesting. So, they had originally come out in this. What we're seeing right now is the shot of them at the end of the runway where they both look like Cher. Like, the long hair, the makeup kind of deal. I will say that extra smalls is looking more Cher than Naomi is, and there's a good reason behind that. I want to talk about this for a moment. So, is it Ricardo? Yeah. So Ricardo, aka Extra Smalls, is looking like a lost member of the Village People in the before, kind of. He's got this big, thick mustache, these glasses, this scruff kind of thing. He's very much looking like, you know, someone that you'd hook up with in a bar that has a back room. So I know. And then you get Extra Smalls. Girl, this is a bit harsh. This is not the best face that's out there, but this particular screenshot, I was like, ooh, wow. All right.
That's I can't right now.
It's spooky. It's a little scary. And what's worse is the clocked hairline. Like, I'm looking at that and I'm like, girl, is that a lace front? It don't look like a lace front, because I'm pretty sure I'm seeing Ricardo's actual hairline. Like, or the front of that wig is just been hacked up by a weed whacker. I don't know what happened.
No, this just doesn't. It's not like the best hair.
Right.
The makeup is very traditionally like Naomi. I see Naomi in this look, the makeup. This is not a great picture. Oh my God.
I know. It's just.
Garrett, come on.
It's like, spooky. It's spooky. Now, one of the things that happens during the routine, back in the workroom, Rue pushes on Naomi and says, you know, like, why are you always like focused on this perfection and blah, 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 or whatever. And Naomi reveals that she doesn't want to make a mistake and look a fool. And of course, Rue stomps on that immediately and says, I want you to say something stupid and I want you to like make a mistake and act like a fool. Like, she challenges her right then and there. So I didn't know how this was going to play out. When Naomi reveals while they're doing painting faces on their partners that she's going to do boy drag, I was like, oh, no, girl. Like, don't do that. Like, of all the things in the world you do not do boy drag. Like, especially at this stage of the game. Like, and I was like, damn it, she could go home. Like, this is, I see how the episode is going to play out. She's going to do boy drag. They're going to read her for filth. And then she's going to end up going home. And that's not what we want.
Maybe.
So, but what she does is she comes out and she pulls off her hair, her Cher long straight hair. And then, as we found out, Manila did provide the mustache to Naomi, and she had it in her pants pocket. So she pulls it out and sticks it on her face because she's got this cute little, like, you know, bowl cut kind of deal. And the whole point is that she's supposed to look like, Sunny. So now it's the Sunny and Cher, like, kind of thing. But notably, Naomi is still being very, you know, fashion, you know, with a femme side. Like, it's a bit of a gender F. You know, she's got the bell bottoms, but they're couture pants. She's got like the flare on the jacket sleeves, yet it's still cut like, you know, kind of in between male and female cut. Like, so, yeah, it's interesting. And it is kind of comical to see Naomi with this big, stupid mustache on her face. And yet she still looks pretty as Naomi. So,
yeah. And again, like, as I'm looking at this picture, like, the eyes are, like, as you can tell, the eyes are pretty much the same.
Mm-hmm.
The eyebrows, not so much. But the eyes definitely look the same. The lips are kind of the same. There's some similarities in, like, the makeup. There's also a whole big-ass chin couture on both of them. It's kind of big. But that's just me.
I know. So I think it was successful, but I don't necessarily think it was better than Trinity and Indigo.
Yeah, this was my fun one. Like, I kind of, it was like, oh, cute. Like, I get what she did. I like what she did. It was a bit of a risk, considering Drag Race, blah, blah, blah. But it worked.
Right. So,
and she had fun with it.
Yeah. So for me, like you said, there was fun, fabulous, and forgettable. For me, I was like, one duo was perfection, and I think it was Trinity and Indigo. I thought they knocked it out of the park. Agreed. Which gets us to the lip sync portion of things. You ready, Damon, to move on?
Mm-hmm.
The time has come. Ready to lip sync for your legacy. Good luck, and don't fuck it up.
So, Yeah. Wait, I should probably do this before we move on. If you haven't seen the episode. Yeah, like we've already spoiled a bunch, but we're really going to start spoiling some shit now. So if you haven't seen the episode, you haven't heard online, you haven't read all the outrage and the craziness about what comes next, here we go. So interestingly, they paid out some coin for this performance for the Legacy song. Because it's Judy Garland and it's Come Rain or Come Shine and it's the crazy one. And by the crazy one, I mean it's the fast one. Like, it changes tempo beat, and it gets, like, it has the bongo drums, and it, like, you know, it's a version of that. I don't think it's the original release recording, and I don't think it's the live one either. So it's kind of like an in-between. But, so we have Miss Monet Exchange and Naomi as the top two.
Yay!
Yeah. and our bottom two are Latrice and Manila, a.k.a. Latrilla. I wasn't that shocked about the bottom two.
Well, I mean, okay, let's be honest. Let's grab that cup of tea, as it were, and just kind of think about it for a minute. You look at, so you go across the board.
Mm-hmm.
Like, to me, if you look across the board of the episode and you kind of have to pick and choose, like, who did good and who did bad.
Right.
To me, like, Trinity and Indigo, boom.
Right.
To me, Monet and Patty, boom. Good. Right. So that leaves Monique, Latrice, and Manila. And Naomi.
Right. As the other four duos to pick from.
I think Monique, who was safe, I think it was a right decision to make her safe. That one, boom, stop. So you now have three. Naomi didn't really falter to me.
Right.
Whereas Manila and Latrice, there are some choices. As I mentioned in, like, my part of this is, like, choices, and I'm going to keep mentioning that. And I love, thank you, Tatiana, for that word. This is definitely, there's choices here. This is not the, as we said, we're splitting hairs, like, in this case. Or they said on the, Pit Stop. I was just kind of watching. I hadn't seen all of it, but I watched a little bit of it before we started the episode. And it's Trixie and Morgan McMichaels.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we're splitting, like, tiny hairs at this point.
Right.
So it's very easy to kind of, like, fall into the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
So, and unfortunately, here they go. Like, I'm not a fan of the top, one of the tops, Naomi. I'll just go ahead and put it out there. I think I agree with you, and, like, probably a lot of our audience, I think Trinity should have been in the top with this, with Monet, potentially.
Right.
Only because Trinity knocked it out of the fucking park.
Right. I think in the runway, hands down for me, it was, like, the best. Mm-hmm. Maybe the Judy's performance number had a big, you know, effect on the judges for that duo, and we didn't really get to see six performances. We saw a performance of the song with all six duos cut in and out, like, constantly edited. So I don't know how much Trinity and Indigo's Judy number
went. Yeah,
might have been a factor.
He knows. I will. So yeah. So there we go. So we're here in the bottom, and there, and so just we get this. And so
I want you to pay attention to the fact that, all right, so Naomi fully changed.
Uh-huh.
So we've got this green grass, astroturfy kind of, like, vintage 60s mod, like, you know, coat and outfit thing going on.
Mm-hmm.
Monet is still in the same gold outfit. She has walked out with an umbrella because the song is Come Rain or Come Shine. So you expect a prop.
Yep, it's a prop.
So Monet sings, but Monet does a park and bark. She just stands. Kind of. Well, yeah, she doesn't bark much. she just basically stands there, and she does what I call the chanteuse. She mm-hmm. goes for the emotional, evocative, like, I'm just going to emote, basically.
Mm-hmm.
My concern is, girl, you are not Latrice. This is not the infamous, you know, song that Latrice did when she was pregnant. So,
yeah,
best be careful about your choices.
So, yeah, so that's so this kind of goes right into my thoughts on this thing, because mm-hmm. it's choices. It is all about choices in this situation. There was a choice to be made about how you perform this song. Mm-hmm. And I understand what Monet was trying to do.
Right.
And had the song stayed at the tempo and what have you that it started with,
mm-hmm.
I would have been okay with her kind of doing that, like, emoting the song from this moment in the stage and maybe walking a little bit kind of thing. I probably would have been better with that. I honestly, and I just as me personally, a choice was made with the prop.
Right.
She honestly should have kept that down on the stage until then.
Right.
Until she was going to reveal it. Since nothing changed on her body.
Right.
Like the outfit didn't change, nothing changed. Then it kind of like, oh, okay, she looks like she's wearing the same thing. And maybe if the, you know, producers or whatever had been smart, they would have maybe told her, like, put that down on the ground. Like, wait, like until, you know, because
right.
everyone would have seen her walk out with it, obviously. But
right.
she puts it down and then she stands and split in her spot before while they do the whole like last chance to impress or whatever.
Right.
You know, win $10,000, make the da da da. Yeah.
Right.
Boom. Okay. So it's set. You may see it kind of if you're camera panning and you can kind of see it, but it's kind of not there. Choices in regards to Naomi. She did a really good job of, you know, changing outfits, because I don't think the Cher outfit would have, or the Cher Sunny outfit would have worked in this case.
Correct.
She made the choice to move a lot mm-hmm. and perform the fuck out of this song. She was very much giving you crazy Judy Garland, Liza Minnelli kind of like feel for it, and it worked.
She delivered so high on the energy of the erratic mm-hmm. behavior of Judy Garland, especially mm-hmm. when she performed live and she was high. Shocker, kids, for those of you that don't know about your icon, Judy Garland, she did a lot of drugs. and that was due to the fact that she got addicted to them because she was being given barbiturates and the rest of it when she was filming like with the big studios. So they're sort of to blame. And she became an addict in that. So yeah, Naomi like went all out.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to say, honestly, delivered. And it was, you know, kind of shocking to me.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I was not a happy camper about how these two were side by side. And Monet's basically just standing there holding herself and, you know, giving herself a hug.
Like, Latrice, I think, said it in the episode. Like, I am not looking at anyone else but Naomi at this point. Naomi made a great choice with choosing the color of this outfit. Mm-hmm. It was very, like, bright. And I liked it. I liked what she did. I liked that she made the choice to do this with this song. It worked. And she did it really well, and kudos to her for making this decision.
Right. And I mean, she put the Judaisms in it. I mean, she just – there was so much. The dress was vintage from, like, the look, the aesthetic. A lot of it was just speaking of that era in which she was kind of, you know, getting her heyday towards the end of her life with some of that. So that gets us to Naomi wins.
Mm-hmm. No, congratulations, Naomi.
Yeah. That's her first win ever, I believe, is mm-hmm. the way it was referenced. So
in All Stars, yeah.
So I was happy for her. It was kind of obvious, which gets I'll just say it. Like, to me, there was never a doubt. And did you even try, girl? Like, So this is one of the criticisms of one of the people that's in our entourage chat. They privately said to me, did she even, like, try, meaning Monet? And I was like, well, like, I didn't quite answer it because I understood that Monet was going a totally different route. And we've seen this before in lip syncs, mostly in regular seasons, where one queen goes balls to the wall and the other queen is very subdued. And sometimes it works in the subdued favor, but it also tends to work in the one that goes, like, all nutsy and crazy. So
it's never been consistent. And that's kind of the thing.
Right.
So you can, you have to make that, again, choice. You have to decide what you want to do. And I don't want to say that Monet didn't try. However.
Right.
Was this a tactic?
Let's talk about that. So all the drama back in the workroom is about the fact that someone's going to break up Latrilla.
Yep.
Either Latrice or Manila goes home. And whoever wins the lip sync for your legacy now has the burden of sending home one of these beloved, all-star, long-standing queens. Do you send home the comeback queen, the most beloved of all queens, who has a huge fan base that, you know, there's not nobody who doesn't, you know, love Latrice? Or do you send home the biggest competitor, Manila, who has been delivering over and over again and has all these wins?
Who's had the greatest track record. I wonder, I'm curious if she's had the most wins ever in All-Stars. I would be curious to figure that part out.
I don't know.
I'd
so,
have to look at that. But anyway, but that's something that kind of in my head, like, she's been doing really well. She even admits it. She talked about it at the beginning of the episode. Like, who's, like, she's been in the bottom, I think, once or twice. And then she's won 3 times.
Let me take a look. All right. So Manila technically won twice. No, won 3 times. Was safe 3 times. Was only low once. And that was in episode 2. But she wasn't in the bottom. So, yeah, it's there's definitely some politicism and some gameplay that comes in. It comes into this decision. And I do kind of wonder a little bit if Monet just wasn't really delivering on it because she would rather put the burden on Naomi to be the one that chooses who gets eliminated.
It would be a choice. It would be a tactic. I can't say yay or nay. Because to me, I like what she did with it.
Right.
I just don't think, I think given the opposite literally going on right behind beside her, it was very hard for me to keep my focus on her.
Right. And so in the workroom when they have these, you know, heart-to-heart talks and they have a discussion, Naomi, you know, admits and recognizes that Latrice saved her and that, you know, they've created a bond and they've done things and that also that Naomi has a connection with Manila, but hers is more of an idol worship kind of thing. And so she has to decide, like, do we go by the report card, which is like the new way they've been phrasing things, which is about like wins and judges' critiques, or do you go by in a new direction, which is to break the rules, the unofficial rules, so to speak, break the terms of the agreement and go with eliminating your biggest competition. So you can win.
Yeah. It's going to always be interesting what they decide to do. And in this case, spoiler alert, she sends Manila home.
I was gagged.
I was not.
I was shocked that she sent Manila home because I'm gonna spill my own tea now. I predicted before the season began when they did the promo shoot with the ice and the crowns, I spotted one weird eccentricity about all of it. In the very first public release of the promo, Manila was the only queen that got the crown out of the ice. in the very first promo. And then a second promo came out in which more of the queens were like breaking the crown out of the ice. But I noticed it the very first thing and I thought, you motherfuckers, if that's your little cheat tip off, like in the edit that Manila wins, I'm on to your shit. And so I've been quietly waiting episode after episode after episode for Manila to win. And she's been on that trajectory and she's been doing really good. And her promo stuff, like I knew she was going to be on All Stars before it was announced because suddenly she just popped back up like big time. And she was suddenly really promoting herself and she was putting pictures out and she was doing all this stuff. And I was like, girl, this ain't the Oscars. You ain't got a campaign. Like, but that's part of what's maybe part of the bigger game. And so when this moment happens and Naomi decides to eliminate the competition and stick with a friendship as opposed to sending home the person who's been in the bottom, I personally was gagged. I was not prepared for her to pull this move.
And the reason I say I was not, and I'm going to put it out there, is because listening to what Naomi has been saying and listening to how she's been doing and how she, you know, everyone wants to win. Don't get me wrong. Everyone wants to win.
Right.
But there are certain things that she's been saying. You know, she skirted. She's been safe. And then
right,
she got knocked for a loop last week when she was in the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
And she probably realized, oh, shit, I could go home literally next week. So I got to do something.
Right.
So she pulls all these tricks out of her sleeve somehow, you know, somehow I somehow gets into the top two. Don't you know, I don't even know where that came from personally.
I know,
just given what I see, but she made it in the top two and it's like I knew it the minute she made it in the top two. I was like, okay, Manila's going home. And you want to know why? Because Naomi is afraid of the competition.
I have to say, on strategy, it was not a bad move.
Yep.
I just was not ready for it.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah. She sends Manila home. And Manila is gracious. She is a good queen in that she doesn't have a meltdown. And that's not to say that meltdowns are bad. But, like, she, you know, she composes herself well, and there's none of this drama about you don't really love me. You know what I mean? Like there's none of that happens. Naomi even says to her when she hugs her, when she says goodbye, that I'm so sorry and I love you. Like, Naomi realizes that, like, this is not what Manila thought was going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
I will say this, though. There is one other thing that I want to say about all this. Manila, notably, when she leaves the stage, says, see you later. Now, the reason why I'm pointing that out is because Latrice said almost something very much like that, and then she came back. So put on your conspiracy aluminum tinfoil hats, kids, because here's what I'm saying. Sometimes I think some things are kind of known, and I wonder if Latrice had a heads up or an idea that she would have a chance to come back into the competition. And that's why she said what she said. So remember, this season might have a lot of twists and turns, so mark my words. If Manila Luzon has a chance to come back into the competition before the finale, it will happen. Naomi will be slaughtered and sent home, and Manila may very well win the whole thing yet. We'll see. I don't have any inside tell. This is all purely my gut making up bullshit. So I'm being honest. So we had four down, and then unfortunately five. So now we're down to Trinity, Monique, Naomi, the killer, Latrice, and Monet. So now I'm not sure about what's happening next, honestly, because to me, it made sense that Latrice would go home and then Naomi would go home. That's the order I thought it was going to be. Now Manila's gone. So, like, there's all this shit going on online about how it's all pretty messy. And like they said in the pit stop, you know, they have that conversation, Trixie and Morgan McMichaels, they flat out talk about the fact that Trinity is now very much in danger. And this is what I wanted to circle back to, Damon, is that Trinity has a target, a bullseye on her, because now she is the queen that has the most wins remaining out of who's left. And now that Naomi kind of unofficially broke the unexisting rules. If Trinity doesn't win from here on out, Trinity will not win. Just like Latrice needed to win from here on out to not get eliminated.
Yeah.
So I don't know if Latrice is going to turn into the next Roxy Andrews. And what I mean by that is that she keeps getting held on and held on and held on to not be eliminated, because eventually when you get to the end, you don't expect her to win because she was in the bottom.
So Smashy actually, or Baron, actually mentioned that to me during our another chat, you know, separately. I don't think she is yet. Like, I don't think she's the Roxy yet. And the main reason is because I don't see, she hasn't been saved enough.
Right.
Or been at the bottom and remain, you know, I gave you this top. Like she gave me this top. Like no, there's not been that kind of shit going down.
Right. Now I do think it's interesting in the live chat, Eric said Trinity is the only white queen remaining. So all you people talking about, you know, your attitude about how the Drag Queen Hall of Fame has three white women in it. And it's about time we add some color to that wall for those portraits. Ooh. Technically, the odds are more in favor that a person of color, that a queen of color, a QOC, if you will win overall. But it's still not a guarantee.
No.
There
and,
is some...
I can't even... Oh, I can say this much. We are very, very close.
Right.
Because if we're now at five.
Right.
Right. We're at five. So if they keep four, like I think they've done, you know, in times last year, then we're going to just lose one more queen.
Right. In essence, if it's a 10 episode season, we're already at eight. So kids, we got two more to go.
Mm-hmm.
But if it's an 11 episode season, then it'll be three more to go.
When does season 11 start, or 12 start, whatever?
I think it starts, well, it starts this month, I think.
Yeah.
Hang on. Because I'm pretty sure Eric or Philip actually gave the notification in the chat a couple months ago that the new season supposedly, and I still don't know if this is confirmed, season 11 starts on the 22nd. So if that's the case, that means we only have two episodes left, unless they do something even more fuckery, which is run the finale and then straight into the first episode of season 11 in the same night, which is even shadier than what they did last year. But
that's gonna be right. So if we keep with the same trajectory,
right,
so the 15th would probably be the finale,
right?
I'm gonna be an NAB.
I was gonna say you're gonna be on the road. Man. You're gonna be out of state when that goes down. Girl, I'm gonna tell you this right now. I don't know what's on your itinerary for Friday night, but you might want to figure out how to get yourself in front of a live viewing.
I want to watch this fucking thing. Like, if it's the finale, then yes, I will try to find some way to do it. I don't know what, but I'll try it some way. I'll find it somehow.
Yeah.
I'm sure someone will be watching. Someone that does. You know.
Put a post online, go to Facebook and be like, who's going to NAB that's going to watch live? Because I need to see this shit go down. I need to
see it.
Yeah.
I may even bring my laptop so I can watch it on Saturday, like something. I don't know. Who knows? Right. Anyway.
You ready to move on to our last segment?
Yeah, let's move on.
Maybe.
Ladies and gentlemen, start your engines and may the best all-star win.
Okay, so Damon, snaps and eye rolls. Let's go.
Okay, so let's go. So I have two because I can't ever do one. My first one is to Monet's redemption. You know, as she mentioned in this episode, this was the episode in her season that she got eliminated on. Mm-hmm. And, you know, understandable, respectful, because she kind of sucked in that episode, but
Right.
She did a pretty good job this time. Again, her choices about the whole runway, or not runway, the lip sync were questionable.
Right.
But, you know, hey, whatever. She right. did it good. And then also my other one is actually the Tinder workroom moments. Specifically, there's a couple of them. Like, and it's Rue actually, like, sobbing, like, tearing up, you know, because they're talking about the friendships. Yes. Everything else, and it was with Latrice and Tim, mm-hmm. where we realized, like, we find out that Latrice, that Tim, has been with her while she was, you know, while Latrice was incarcerated. We all know that Latrice was in jail for a while,
right?
And during that time, while she was in jail, she had a
storage unit
that mm-hmm. was sold. So they spent like. Made outfits so that she can get back into performing, so that they spend like days, like, you know, putting stuff together and buying fabric and
right.
And it just is very touching to me that they they shared that.
Yes.
It shows the depth of their friendship. Mm-hmm. There was another one with Monique and Danny shit. And RuPaul, like, kind of like they were kikiing about the noses for a minute. Like, their noses are kind of Danny's nose is very, like, nice, and they kind of keep going from there. And it just becomes this very moment. And like, Monique kind of comments that she wanted to have that moment with RuPaul, and she did, and it happened to be with her bestie there, which was kind of sweet. So I really want to say,
right.
good TV, you guys, on that shit, because that was very much like a very touching,
right.
You know, touching time.
Right.
Good for you.
For me, my snaps were for the Herstory lesson. I appreciated that there was a whole talk about, like, Judy Garland's life and the legacy of it and the fact that she died right at the time when the Stonewall riots occurred. Mm-hmm. I wrote despite the issues, and the only real issue technically in the retelling of history for LGBT that I had a problem with was the way it was phrased for Rue's scripting. It led on this technical lie, like this myth that has never been proven, that the people that were in the Stonewall Tavern, the bar that night when they decided to riot, the legend was for many decades that the people in there were mourning Judy Garland, and that enraged them to actually mm-hmm. riot. And that has been since disputed by those that survived that were there, especially from the trans community, specifically to say, like, well, yes, we were mourning the fact that Judy Garland died. That was not the reason we threw bricks through windows and fought back. Like,
yeah.
her dying was not like the shot heard round the world. That's not how mm-hmm. that works. Like, the running thing is the shot glass heard, you know, glass breaking around the world. Like, they were coincidences that came together, and yes, one kind of fed into the other, but one was not the mm-hmm. reason for the other. Like, the fact that she died was not the reason that suddenly they decided to stand up. They had been fed yeah. up with being treated like crap, and that yep. was kind of what, you know. So I don't think that they're separate, but I don't like the fact that there's this storytelling aspect that it makes it seem like one was the catalyst for the other. I'm like, mm-hmm. no. And I own that I believe that kind of concept, that mythos, until, like, I actually was watching and listening to people from that time say, no, like, love Judy, but she ain't the reason. Like, that's not mm-hmm. kind of how that works. So that was my snaps, was at least that we had some history in that, because I was disappointed when that was happening that the queens, who were from fucking New York City, did not know that Judy Garland died at the time, the week when Stonewall happened. The fact that Monet Girl. Exchange and I forget who the other one was were both like, I didn't know that. And I was like, I ought to bitch slap you into next year. I was so irritated. I was like, I have high respect for you until this very moment. Like, of all the people in the world, I didn't expect that to come out of. So that's my snaps. Damon, your eye rolls.
No groceries, kids, or Gary will slap the shit out of you. My eye rolls are like, okay. So, I'm kind of going to go on a bit of a tangent, maybe a little bit. Like, but like, what was Latrice thinking? This was her opportunity to kind of redeem herself. She needed to win. She needs to win. She needs to do everything. And we know Latrice can beat a mug. We've seen the crystal sit that she's done in the past. We've seen all these great, like, fantastic, like, looks, sometimes a little orange, but that's beside the point.
Right.
She got used to the lights now. So, but you know what I mean? Like, she's very well, like, she's known for doing a really great high paint. And I'm a little surprised that she kept it so off for Tim, a.k.a. Alexis. You know, it just seemed off to me. Right. It seemed odd to me. The choices that she made, you know, and I don't know if, again, I don't know if some of this was because of Tim or if it was because of her or what. But, like, the dresses, the red and blue, the only way, like I said in earlier this episode, the only way something like that is going to work is if they are the same dress in different colors, a la
right.
What Manila kind of did, where the dresses are the same colors, but there's two that are the different. There's one thing that's a different color.
Right.
You know, it's just choices. Like make good choices, make good decisions. Because this was not the episode to fuck up in.
Right.
And you know now, because you got in the bottom. Right. You're almost at home. And I hope you're wanting to win. You're wanting to succeed. But I need you to do
right.
more than what you're doing. And I don't know if you can. I don't know what's going on. I don't know if the whole, like Manila mentioned in her, like during the, like, you know, conversation with Naomi and Monet, like maybe, you know, she was distracted or put off by distracted essentially by the fact that their bestie was there. You know, if right. someone who I've known for that long, who knows pretty much all my shit and knows all my stories and knows my life pretty much about the same as I do, were there and I've not seen them or been around them for weeks/months, it's going to be heart-wrenching. I can't imagine how, like, Trinity and Manila felt. When, mm-hmm. you know, the husband or the, you know, boyfriend that they've been dating for who knows how long or married to comes in, you know, after we've been apart for so long. It can take its toll. But again, right. you know, this is a competition and I know that they know what they need to do.
Right.
So maybe that's what it was. But to me, I needed you to do more. Like, I love Latrice and I think everyone here can, you know, will say that they love Latrice. I'm not loving this Latrice.
Yeah, it's not meeting my expectation. That's what it comes down to for me.
When I think about Latrice and when I think about this, I thought she was going to knock this out of the park. And not this episode, this competition.
Right.
And I've been consistently disappointed.
Yeah. My audio rolls for this episode, I said misproportioned discotheque. And this is about the dress that RuPaul won. Wow, I can't talk anymore. What she wore on the runway. Like I said, from the bust up, I loved it. But from there down, hell no. I don't know what that was. It was very weird. It was very strange. And it sure as hell wasn't cinched and didn't give you body. So...
Mm-hmm.
I rolls for that bitch. That's what I gotta say.
Mm-hmm.
Anything else you want to say as we wrap it up?
No.
All right. So, like I said, you know, we're down to maybe two or three episodes left. We're on, you know, we're kind of rounding up the season, sort of. Thank God. So we'll see what happens in the next couple of weeks to come. I don't even know what next week's episode is all about. I missed what the preview was.
I do like the brief preview about like Trinity calling Naomi out on like what she did. And I love Naomi's comeback. If that's the comeback, I'm just gonna own because it's editing,
right?
Like, it's life not fair, and I'm like, oh, girl, like, ooh, I felt that burn from here.
Yeah. So if you would like to get in touch with us and express your opinions about what we think about the show, you can do that by going to our blog at cubsoutloud.com. You can also send us an email at cubsoutloud@gmail.com, or you could actually do something kind of crazy. You could pick up a phone. You could give us a call. You could leave a voicemail. And to do that, it's 361-265-8255, otherwise known as 361-COL-TALK. And we would actually play it and talk about it on the show. If you want to follow us on social media, type in Cubs Out Loud as one word. You'll probably find us somewhere, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, YouTube, all that kind of jazz. If you want to join the Kitty Chit Chat, where we talk about Drag Race, all things Drag Race, and put a little bit of a 48-hour embargo on discussing the episode and people's thoughts, you could go to tinyurl.com/telegram-coldr. If you would like to support what we do here at Cubs Out Loud, which is Cubs Out Loud, the regular stuff, as well as COLDR for Drag Race, you can go to Zazzle.com/Cubs Out Loud and you can buy yourself a fabulous shirt that happens to say Cubs Out Loud with the logo, with the crown. It says Drag Race on it. You can pick a color, pick a size, have it sent to your home. It would be fun. Or you could, you know, get like a, I think we have a clutch, like a purse with the logo and some other fun stuff. You could you could also get regular just COL kind of logo stuff. And we have some other fun shirts that are on there that don't necessarily have to do with our logo. We have, what is it? Hello, my name is Sloppy Bottom 23. You know.
Little things like that.
Yeah. Fun stuff like that. Also, if you would like to, you could become a patron over at patreon.com/cubsoutloud, and you can, for as little as $1 a month. Used to be 25 cents an episode, but actually, if you listen to all the regular episodes and the COLDR, that's like a half a quarter.
I know, right?
Per episode. And we just had someone new join us at Patreon. We just found out like on Thursday at the $5 level. So we. Thank you, because that helps pay for like the domain and the hosting kind of shit. We appreciate that. Also, if you want to help promote Cubs Out Loud, please do so. Tell your friends about it. You can give us a nice, lovely 5-star rating with comments on iTunes or any of the places that you get podcasts. You can also subscribe on Google Play Podcasts and Stitcher Radio and pretty much anywhere you can find either the COL or the COL Drag Race feeds. They are separated when it comes to the audio podcast. So if you only like the Drag Race stuff, that's perfectly fine. You can listen to just that.
Yeah.
And Damon, before we say goodbye, where can they find you to get in touch?
You can click your heels 3 times. And no, seriously. Really, to find me, you can find me as TheaterCub79 on pretty much any bear-related site, Growler, and Facebook even, or you can find me as pup_umbra on Twitter.
Excellent. If you would like to get in touch with me, I'm pretty much found anywhere, social media, internet, like slight app-based, whatever, as GareBear73, that's GARBEAR73. So until the next time, babies, just remember that we're all born naked and the rest is drag. I'm telling the truth now.